Gavrilik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast with Mick Warner and Glenn McFarlane and Macca. We have to talk about Carlton off the top again. What a mess they are in. 19 unanswered goals against Port Adelaide, although you've got to say with the team that they put out on the park, I didn't really expect much else. I said last week, I really feel sorry for David Teague. I love the way that he sort of went on the attack and called on Carlton to show a bit of courage and back him in. But unfortunately, I can't see that happening. And once again, another coach is going to be blamed for what is really a dysfunctional football club.
It is, Mick. Yeah, thanks for having me, mate. You summed it up beautifully there. I seriously believe in its entirety, this Carlton Football Club has become almost a soulless club. It astounds me how bad they are at the moment. Yes, let's talk about the great things about getting their, you know, the balance book, balance sheet balanced, and you know, we've got money in the bank and we've got this. But as a football club, they are broken. And I do feel sorry for David Teague. This review, good footy clubs have reviews. They have ongoing reviews, but they do them privately behind closed doors. They don't make a big song and dance of it. This runs, and what started out as this isn't against the coach or this is not to, has become all about the coach. And there's many more things broken inside the Carlton Footy Club than just David Teague.
It's interesting what you say there about sort of the state of the club. It's almost that no man's land disease that can grip football clubs. I know all about it as a Richmond supporter, 37 years of no man's land disease, if that is what we can call it. Essendon have sort of fallen into it. Obviously, they were a bit, you know, they had this drug scandal, which sort of plunged them into it. But Carlton have been in no man's land for a long time. And it's just sad to see quality people get spat out of the machine. But until the club's able to sort of find a way to make itself great again, which Richmond was somehow able to do, it's stability though. Unless you're all swimming in the one direction, maybe the purpose of the review was always to spit David Teague and whoever else is going to fall victim out. But it's just been unsavoury. And a lot of the people that I talk to at Carlton say that they're prepared to give Luke Sayers, the new president, the opportunity to show that he can turn it around. But I wouldn't be surprised if in 2 years' time we're talking about the sacking of Ross Lyon or Alistair Clarkson from Carlton.
Yeah, you wouldn't know, would you? And that's the whole point, that Luke Sayers has been around this football club for a long time. And yes, he does deserve the opportunity to try and make it work because, you know, by heavens, we need a Carlton that actually works. This has been a footy club that's been 20 years in the doldrums, you know, self-inflicted in a lot of ways, so many different ways. And as you said, so many good people have been chewed up and spat out of the system. You make a great point about footy clubs and they're in that no man's land. Even with that, you look at someone like a Melbourne Football Club and you did say Richmond as well. Richmond stayed the course with Damien Hardwick. The easy way would have been able to just sack him and get rid of him. I'm not saying that's what they needed to do with David Teague, but they didn't need to put him on a spit roast the way they've done publicly and do it the way they've done it. I think it's been so unsavoury. But just on Melbourne, you look at what Melbourne went through. I blame the players here a lot too, Mick, in a lot of ways. And that's why I said it's quite soulless. Is there a loser's mentality with this footy club now? Like, I know they had no one to put on the field last week, but they didn't give a yelp when it mattered for someone like Mark Murphy. I can only hope that they can do the same for Eddie. Not the same. I only hope they can do something better for Eddie Betts this week. But Melbourne, if you remember, after all that tanking stuff and things like that, they were a footy club that was broken, that didn't know how to win. And I just worry that Carlton's become that way too.
Yeah. But on the flip side, if they do get Ross Lyon, and it seems to me that he's the guy, you know, I don't have anything to base that on other than just sort of reading the tea leaves, Clarkson, you know, maybe, but I haven't seen anything that suggests that they're going to be able to land Clarkson, but they're going to land a big fish. Let's say it's Ross Lyon. I can sort of see that they'll get a bounce out of that and that Ross or whoever it is, a big name, will be able to galvanise this playing group, grab them by the scruff of the neck, and that you'll see results. They do have a good list. They got exciting players. So as shambolic as it's all been, and I felt the pain of Liam Pickering, his manager, he's sort of having a go at the journos, but he wasn't really. If you go back, he's actually having a go at the people leaking to the journos.
100%.
But maybe, you know, they will be able to turn this around, Carlton, with a really strong, authoritative coach.
Yeah, let's hope. That's what you've got to hope. But we've said that before, and we've said that. Have they put in a process to replace the coach? We don't know. Did Carlton never put in processes to actually appoint a coach, or do they just go for the biggest name and the biggest personality around? That's what always worries me about Carlton. Collingwood have done something completely different this time, Mick. They've actually put in a process this time. It's probably for the first time, in a sense, in the club's history that they've actually gone through a process. And it remains to be seen whether, you know, I think you're right. If Ross Lyon can come in, if it is Ross Lyon or Alistair Clarkson, there is a bit to work with Carlton. But I reckon as much as anything else, you've got to get inside the mindset of some of those players at the footy club. They've got a pretty good spine. If you look at the spine, there's a pretty good spine there to work with. But again, this the whole list management side of things, that they are, you know, they've spent a lot of money on players who I don't think are anywhere near the players that that they thought they were getting. And I'm talking about particularly, you know, Zach Williams has got a lot of work to do. They wanted him to be a midfielder. He's, you know, he's an $800,000 halfback flanker at the moment. So I think there's a lot to work with. But, gee, they've got to get inside the mind of some of these players.
Well, they've done a review. I don't know if they've done a process for a coach. I mean, they may yet if they decide next week to
you don't believe that, though. You don't believe that they would do that, though. Surely they've decided, I think, don't you?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, then they get caught a long way behind Collingwood, of course, to just quickly on Collingwood, are we any closer to knowing what they're doing for a coach?
I think we are closer. But, I mean, obviously, as soon as they were never going to, in my view, they were never going to appoint a coach until after the end of the season. You know, they've got to do their due diligence in terms of, and they've got to do the right thing by Robert Harvey. We know that Robert Harvey's not going to coach Collingwood. But, you know, he's expressed that he would love to have a crack at it if he could and hasn't really had other than a couple of little conversations. So I think we're all thinking Don Pike at the moment, but they've been pretty good, Collingwood, in keeping things relatively in-house, which it can't be said for Carlton at the moment.
The other massive talking point last week was the Tasmanian situation with Colin Carter, the former AFL Commissioner, Geelong president, doing his Carter report into the state of the bid of Tasmania to have its own standalone team. I was, Colin Carter, for a start, was taken aback at the criticism that he received. Tim Lane, and he had a fiery, very interesting interview Friday night on 3AW. I don't know if you heard it, but he sort of couldn't understand the criticism. My take on it is I couldn't understand how the report became one, like there's three options suddenly: relocation, a joint venture, whatever the hell that is, and or a standalone license. I thought we were just talking about a standalone license, and I think that the waters were muddied a lot by Colin Carter's report, which didn't really tell me anything we didn't already know. I just feel as though the AFL's preferred model, and yes, we're in a COVID, you know, financial crisis, so this is got to be on the back burner, but Tassie just want a timeline that but maybe the AFL's preferred model is a joint venture or a relocation.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's what the AFL would ideally like, because then you're not setting up a club from scratch and you're not spending all that extra money. The likelihood of that happening is not strong, and that's the issue. And I think the whole reason for the Carter report, the whole reason that the Premier of Tasmania, Peter Gutwin, wanted some sort of he wanted a timeline, Mick. He wanted an absolute timeline that he could work around. And that's the thing that they didn't get. The three models, we knew the three models. As you said, we knew exactly what the models were. What it needed was some sort of timeline, whether it was, and we understand that COVID has got in the way of Tasmania coming in next year, the year after, even the year after that. But I tend to think if Colin Carter had to come back and actually said, you know, 2028, we'll lock in that time. We're going to have a 19th team as long as the AFL can agree to that. I think that would have made more sense and would have placated some of the anger that's come from you know, across the water there. They just want a decision and a timeline. And I can understand that to a degree. You know, And now does it put in jeopardy games for next year down there? Like, the Premier has actually said that he won't deal with Hawthorn and North Melbourne until they get some sort of certainty. Well, that's not going to happen, is it?
Well, I hope Peter Gutman follows through on that threat, not necessarily for the people of Tasmania who'll be denied football, but this has become a political game now, and who's going to blink first? I don't see how a Tasmanian team can work unless it is a fresh, new licence. The whole state owns it. They get behind it. You play some games in Lonnie, some in Hobart. But deep down, I don't think the AFL executive, because I don't really think the commission, I'm not sure, I don't have a lot of faith in the commission anyway, but I don't think the AFL executive think that a team in Tasmania is going to work, or they don't have a stomach for it. So it's very unfortunate, but I imagine maybe the next administration will be the one after Gillon McLachlan goes that ultimately has to make that decision.
When will that happen, Mick?
Well, it's hard to see Gillon McLachlan going at the end of this year with COVID, and where would he go? Although I did hear someone say he could go and run the Olympics now that there's
2032. Exactly. That's been the talk around town. Whether there's any truth in that, we don't know.
That'd be a nice job for the next 11 years. But look, either way, Tassie isn't going to happen imminently with COVID. And although they did get the four women's teams through. But the other interesting thing Gil McLachlan said was that Gold Coast is staying. Forget that, which I find a little bit unpalatable. Not that I've always said I believe New Gold Coast is a great spot for an AFL team, if only they built it the way they built Greater Western Sydney. How good that would have that have been. But it's hard for a St Kilda or a North Melbourne or Hawthorn supporter to cop suggestions of relocation or joint ventures when the steaming, how would I describe Gold Coast?
Steaming sounded interesting.
When the Gold Coast white elephant, steaming white elephant.
Yeah, steaming white elephant, steaming at you. I was thinking of a different sort of steaming, but you make a really good point. Like, and we're this year, and we've spoken about it a couple of weeks ago, is 25 years on from losing Fitzroy. How can we think about losing a team like North Melbourne or another team down there to Tasmania? Tassie deserves its own team, a team that's been picked up and taken down there. That I think if we're going to do Tasmania, we've got to do it properly, or else the people won't be behind it. And then we'll get a whole generation of supporters based in Melbourne who used to follow a particular team. I love the fact that North Melbourne say, get stuff. We're not going anywhere. And the way they're playing as a footy club, they can turn it around pretty quickly. So, I understand your point about Gold Coast. I can see the importance of the marketplace, but gee, they've got to get it right. They've got it wrong for a decade now, and it's cost them so much money. Does that mean are you worried about Stuart Dew in that role for next year?
I've gut feelers that they'll go with him again. Obviously, some other changes to the football department would be how I'd see it. But Ron Joseph, the great legendary North Melbourne administrator who was on the board of North Melbourne not that long ago, he's been adamant. He says, trust me, the AFL want to send North Melbourne to Tasmania. And it's the longer it goes, it's harder to argue with Ron Joseph. But
would solve a problem, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, but would it? Because
it would from their end, but I think it'd be a disaster. I love North Melbourne, I'm not going to say. North Melbourne's become to me what Fitzroy used to be. Fitzroy used to always be my second team. I love them because I love their dogged determination, stick it up everyone else. And you know what? North's got that. North's got that a lot of footy clubs don't have? I talked about soul before. You know what? North Melbourne's got soul, and that's so important in footy.
Good call, Macca. When we come back from the break, talking about soul, we'll talk about where the grand final will be played. So, Macca, it's 11:22 a.m. on this Tuesday, something of August, and I've got my second vaccine shot, which tells you how old I am, at 2 p.m. Mark McGowan was almost indicating that you need to be fully vaccinated to have a grand final. For the players, need to be fully vaxxed to to have the grand final in Perth, which I don't think is going to happen. Is there suddenly a little bit of a, it's not a fait accompli that Perth will get the grand final?
Well, Mark McGowan, not our Mark McGowan, but their Mark McGowan might be the impediment to having the grand final over there. I'm like you, Mick. I'm what am I, 5 days away from having my second jab. That shows how old I am. But yeah, it's you can see the AFL, they are desperate to play this game in Melbourne with you know, something like 50,000 if they could. I can't see how it's going to happen.
How can you play a grand final? I can't take my kids to the park.
No.
And you're telling me that you're going to get...
No, I didn't tell you you were going to. I said that's what the AFL would love in an ideal world, but I can't see
that. It'd be a shocking look. It'd be a shocking look if the AFL is allowed to get pack people into the MCG and there's millions of us who can't live our lives. I mean, just cancel it now. Go somewhere.
You say cancel it. You think they should make the call now?
Yes.
Well, I reckon they've got 2 weeks up their sleeve, Mick, and that's about it. And then they've got to start making a decision. You think the decision's already made, don't you?
No, I don't. There is no way that you can have a grand final in Melbourne. What is it? 4 weeks away.
It'll be 5 weeks away. So obviously we're not going to have that pre-finals bye, but we will have, you know, we think a bye somewhere later in the year, particularly later in the final series, particularly if it is in Perth. You might need to have that. You might need to have, but they certainly were keen to play a couple of finals in Melbourne, even without crowds, in a sense. And you feel for someone like the Melbourne Footy Club, who've just got themselves into the best chance to win a grand final since that 1964 win, and they're going to have to probably do it in Perth. It's fascinating, isn't it? That was incredible, that crowd. Honestly, that I don't know. I want the grand final at the MCG. I'm parochial. I love it. It's the home of footy. But you saw that crowd there on Sunday, and I know, speaking to a few people that were there, said the roar of the crowd was like they'd not heard anything like that before. And I think it's just the passion of people being among other people and screaming out and cheering. It was just phenomenal. And that's why I think we're inevitably going to have to say that it's going to have to be there. I'm not sure the double vaccination or the AFL players being vaccinated is going to be, you know, can't be seen to be jumping queues, can you? They've already done that in other areas. And but yeah, it's going to be fascinating couple of weeks to see what is going to happen and what happens compensation wise with the MCG if they miss out again for a second year in a row.
I think you just tack another year onto the end of their contract to 2059. But Mackie, you've had a couple of big stories in the last week. You had the fascinating reunion between Lee Adamson and Sid Jackson, and then you had a sit down with young Venables from West Coast and his horrible battle with concussion symptoms. Let's start with that one. How shocked were you at the state of his mental health as a result of head knocks?
I was really shocked, Mick. I think we all knew the story of Daniel Venables, the Eagles' youngest premiership player in 2018, but he was also like, he's a Keeler boy, like he's a local Keeler boy, terrific family. His father, Peter, was in the conversation with myself and Mick McGuan over Google Meets. But it's a harrowing tale. And he's you know, it was an accidental bump, and he obviously hit Tim Smith's hip and then hit his head on the ground. Unbelievably, as a under-18s player, he'd had a concussion, and the protocol at Sunshine Hospital was such that anyone under 18 had to get a scan of their brain if that was the case. So he's got a very clear brain scan, and now he's got the brain scan following the incident with 7 brain bleeds. So I think that's a really significant point. And he's also the first player to be ruled out by an AFL panel to say, no, you can't play AFL or competitive sport again. Some of the symptoms he went through, Mick, it's harrowing to listen to about how he basically says he hasn't slept. This is not a slept a good night like you and I would sleep, even though you're a young parent. This is not a good night. He hasn't slept properly since the incident. He would sit under a hot shower because it was the only way he could get through things. And full credit to him, you know, he was given quite some medication to try and wait out the, you know, obviously people thought you can wait out this period of time. he's got up and got going with his life, as difficult it has as it has been. And he's an inspirational kid. I tell you, he's 22. He doesn't know where his future is at the moment, but he's an inspirational kid.
And we're heading towards 100 concussions this year, which is a massive number. And, you know, you saw the update with the Shane Tuck case. They've gone through every second of every game that he played. And
that's incredible, isn't it?
Dig out all of the different head knocks that he received. So, you know, while we're battling COVID and just trying to stay afloat, that's the biggest issue probably facing the game. And the AFL has engaged Peter Gordon, the former Western Bulldogs president, to look at how a concussion compensation fund might look. So it's all happening there in the background. But when you interview someone like Daniel, it just shows you the human toll. Just before we go to the next break, that tell us about the incredible reunion you had with Lee and Sid.
Yeah, it was one of the better things I've done in a lot of years of journalism in regard to that, just to get these two guys together. 51 years. They've never spoken about the incident before. And for those who didn't catch up with the story, it relates back to the 1970 second semi-final when Sid Jackson whacked Lee Adamson in the course of the game. They went to the tribunal, and the Carlton Football Club and their president at the time, George Harris, instructed Sid to claim that Lee Adamson had racially abused him in an effort to get him off. Now, that worked, and he got off. And 20-odd years later, Sid feeling guilty, and he's a wonderful man, Sid, owned up to it, but hadn't spoken to Lee about it, hadn't actually sat down. So Mick McGowan and I, Mick's pretty close to both of these guys, we got them together just before the face-to-face, just before the lockdown, and they spoke about it. And unbelievably, Mick, Lee Adamson has now got 4 Indigenous grandkids. And he broke down and cried in front of us. And we were in tears too, as was Sid, just about the emotion surrounding it. He doesn't blame Sid for what he did. In fact, he said that, you know, he can understand what happened, but he blames George Harris and he blames Carlton. So I'd love to see Mick. I think it'd be really nice if Carlton could come out one day and say, you know, historically we got it wrong in this instance, and we instructed Sid to do this when we shouldn't have. And we're celebrating Eddie Betts this week, and the club's done some wonderful things Indigenous wise. I'd love to see them come out, and I know Tim Lane was on that same sort of train of thought on the weekend as well.
Well, St Kilda apologised, didn't they, straight away after Russell Jackson's incredible Absolutely. Stuff with Robbie Muir. So what did Carlton, did you talk to Carlton? Or
I didn't, in fairness. I didn't go to them, but I know that they read the story. Collingwood read the story. Collingwood thought it was an important story and talked about putting it on their website and that as well. And this was a meeting of two guys who were drawn into this incredible race row that wasn't. And full credit to Sid Jackson. He is just an amazing human being, and to Lee for doing it. But, I just think it would be really nice if Carlton potentially just come out and said, you know, we as a footy club got it wrong. We do apologise for things that are not our fault. And that's, you know, this is something that happened 50 years ago. But it just would
How
be a
big
nice...
a story was it? How big a story was it at the time? Was Adamson, like, protesting his innocence at the time? And it was...
In the tribunal, Mick, there was a heated row out in the corridors between the Collingwood delegates and the Carlton delegates. Very heated. And Lee was upset. He didn't come out. He felt like he didn't need to come out. He felt like he'd never done it. So, but again, he carried this stigma with him for the next 20 years until Sid came out and said that he didn't say it. And good on Sid for doing that. Fantastic. But the two of them are, they'll meet again. They want to play golf again when the pandemic is over. And it was a huge, huge story. And then, of course, the backdrop to that was that in the 1970 grand final, when they met again the next time, they shook hands, didn't speak to each other for the entire game. And part of that, there was an element in the Collingwood Do Better report where this grand final was referenced, saying that Collingwood supporters booed Sid Jackson, and that was a part of the inherent racism at Collingwood. Well, we put that to Sid. Sid said, "I didn't hear that. I absolutely didn't hear that at all. But it was just an interesting sidelight to that. But not saying that Sid hasn't been racially abused before. His story was absolutely harrowing about his upbringing and the racism that was directed at Sid. And that's why he's such a wonderful, they call him Uncle Sid, and he is just a wonderful human being and so good for the Indigenous people he has been, but also so good for us, like teaching us, you know, about how it was like. I mean, he's one of the stolen generation. He was taken off his family when he was 3 years of age. Like, it makes you cry.
Well, great story, Michael. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the retirement season, the retirement of some premiership heroes and some legends of the game, and also can Geelong win it without Tom Stewart? Well, Macca, you need a lot to go right to win a premiership, and the news that Tom Stewart, of all players, Geelong's best player certainly this year, is out with Liz Frank. Gee, that is a massive blow for Chris Scott.
It sure is. He, as you say, he's, I think you put him alongside Tom Hawkins as being, you know, the two key players for Geelong. And Stewart's form this year has been outstanding. You can't replace a person like that. That's why I always worried a little tiny bit about their defence anyway. So it does open it up. This is such an even season that I'm hoping now from Geelong, because I tipped them at the start of the year. I think they're $4, but the market is so congested at the moment. It might be time for Patrick Dangerfield to put that Superman cape on. He, you know, his record in finals, he's been an amazing player. But gee, if he can elevate him, he may have to elevate himself to a new level in this finals campaign for them to get over the line. It's going to be tough for him, but gee, it's open, isn't it?
It's so open that I'm looking at GWS in seventh spot and thinking, now that getting rid of the bye doesn't help them because they're going to have to win four games, but in a month. But gee, I mean, they beat Geelong and then they pumped Richmond, and Richmond had a crack early but just got blown away. And it's a bit like the Dogs. Are the planets aligning for the Giants? Do they have the cattle? I don't know. I don't think Essendon's going to win it. They'll finish eighth. Bulldogs, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I trust anyone, is what I'm saying, enough to say. Could it be a fairy tale story for the Giants? Probably Melbourne are the best team in it, but it's anyone's to win.
It sure is. And you look at Melbourne, I mean, they've been in grand finals before, only a couple since, you know, since that 1964, which this goes to show how long ago. I wasn't even born then, Mick. That goes to show how long ago since Melbourne won a premiership. And the curse of Norm Smith has been lasted all these years. But, gee, they're not going to get much of a better opportunity. They have got such a good team at both ends of the ground. And, yeah, don't know what to make about the Bulldogs. So the Demons are about $4.25. The Bulldogs, $5.50. Things have gone a bit, you know, a bit off track a little bit for the Bulldogs in recent weeks. Even Brisbane's coming hard. I thought they were gone, but they're coming hard again. Gee, wouldn't it be interesting if the Giants can knock the Swans off week one? If they get through, and gee, you wouldn't want to play the Giants. I agree with you.
They're fierce. They play a hard brand. Actually, I loved one of the best finals I saw was Sydney playing the Giants years ago when I think it was at Homebush, and they just belted the suitcase out of each other. But
they did.
Retirement season, Macca is upon us. The great Eddie Betts has announced his retirement to play 350 games, and what a sensational player he was, but also a role model. And I loved his little speech that he gave to the playing group. He's all class, Eddie, and a few others have followed him. I see Daniel Talia. He might get a job. David Asprey at Richmond.
David Asprey. Levi Casbolt.
Cleverly described David Asprey as the bass player in Richmond's back line. And is that
a good line? Mate,
Nick Blostin, the drummer. But I think Eddie Betts, he's the cream of the retirements. What a great player he was.
Yeah, he's been an incredible player, and I think universally loved. I think that's the thing about Eddie. You know, you get a bit parochial with your own footy club and you know, like your own players, but he's in that rare air where I think players from every club, supporters from every club absolutely love Eddie Betts and what he's been able to do. And I just, you know, he's leaving the game. Hopefully, he basically said, I hope I made you smile. My goodness, he made so many people smile. And I just hope that Eddie can smile at the end of this journey as well. We saw him talk so eloquently and passionately last week. And I just get the feeling, Mick, that for all that he's given to this game, 350 games, so many remarkable goals, that he's got so much more to give in an off-field sort of role. This guy could, you know, could have another 20 years off-field role in the AFL and just make the AFL a better place and make people around him better people.
Yeah, but do you remember it was a brilliant moment a few years ago when he kicked another freak goal from the Eddie Betts pocket in Adelaide, still playing for the Crows back then, and Sydney Stack went over and sort of, you know, gave him a high five. And he actually got criticised for that Sydney Stack at the time, which was just ridiculous. What a
joke. Yeah, that was ridiculous.
But it just sort of sums it up that, as you said, the universal love, there are some polarising players in footy, and he's certainly not one of those. He's an absolute legend of the game. And I'm glad he got to go back to Carlton as well, because I'll always remember him as a Carlton man.
Even though he played his best footy at Adelaide, there's no question that he raised his level and he raised his game at Adelaide. It was a really fitting sort of scenario for him to come back and play a couple of years with the Blues.
Would you think Talia would get picked up?
You would hope so. Like, depending on his body, I think he does, you know, he, as a defender in his prime, he was a really good player. So I hope he does get picked up. They're not easy to come by, good defenders. And if his body was right, I would suggest that he'd be worth taking a punt on. You know, the Crows are obviously going in a different direction, and you can understand they're going young. But there might be a club out there that just needs a really steady defender. And depending on his body, if his body's right, I reckon he's worth a punt.
You know, the funny irony is that the Western Bulldogs is probably the right fit, but he's not going within a full draw of that place.
I don't think that's going to happen while the coach is there.
No. Well, I think while the club is there.
That's true. That is true.
And that leads me to, that
was in your book, wasn't it? The, you know, the boys club. And you know, I'm wondering whether you're going to send a copy to the chairman of the AFL, Richard Goyder, who said on the weekend that he wasn't going to read it, which I would have thought you would have wanted to read that and to have a look at it and to see what was going on. And he said he didn't want to read it.
No, he said he didn't respect it, even though he hadn't read it, which is...
How do you respect it if you haven't read it?
Yeah. Anyway, it's a good endorsement, actually. I think it's probably says it all. But, you know, he's been on the commission, I think, since 2011, 2012. So he was there when they failed Adam Goods. He was there through the Essendon drugs debacle. He was there for the tanking farcical. He was there for Talia. So good luck to you, Richard. But that wasn't a surprise. Although I was happy that it was Mick Malthouse, legendary Mick coach, who asked him about it. But I don't think Richard Goyder's reign as commission chairman will be highly regarded.
Well, it's interesting that he did two interviews in the space of a week, which is rare because we haven't heard a lot from him, have we?
They're rolling him out there, you think?
I don't know. It was an interesting strategy that he's out and about talking. So, I'll spare a copy of your book. I might send it on to him.
Don't waste your time. But with the Tasmania issue, he needed to be out and about. But I've got a view that even though it's a national competition, the AFL Commission Chairman should be Melbourne-based. He should be fully across what's going on at AFL House and with his executive. Too many of our commissioners are out of sight, out of mind, interstate, and I think that's by design. As I say in the book, the real power was ceded long ago to the AFL executive run by Demetriou and then McLaughlin. They're more of a rubber stamp body, the commission, and I don't think that's good enough. But anyway, I'm not sure how you drove me down that path, Macca.
specifically drove you down that path, Mike.
Anyway, look, we've rattled on enough. I think anything else you want to get off your chest?
And there's plenty there. Just obviously, we can't go and see Eddie Betts in his last game, but we celebrate him anyway, don't we? And I think that's an important one. Watch this space, the Blues. It's the powder keg that'll go off pretty soon. We know that. So wishing Eddie all the best. There's not much else. There's plenty of footy to look forward to. And we haven't even spoken about how we spoke a little bit about how close it is, but finals, they're on the doorstep. More quicker than we thought with no pre-finals bye. So bring it on. Can't wait.
Well, the Tigers aren't there, so...
You don't care now, do you?
It's not going to... No, I care. I just... haven't they fallen? They've gone from first to 12th.
It's unbelievable, the fall. I was actually only saying that to my son because I had this, me being... And we try not to put our allegiances out there, Michael, but people do know that I do have a small affinity with barracking with Collingwood. And my grandfather played in the four in a row. So I was starting to fear that Richmond could win that four in a row and take that, equal that record from all those years ago. But has been a spectacular fall. But they'll be back next year. I've got a feeling they might be back next year. Don't know whether they'll win it next year, but you just never know, do you?
No, they need a long holiday and come back and one last shot at it. But...
Anyway, you can't go anywhere on a holiday. That's the problem.
No, you can't. And so, Macca, I'll go back to my couch and you can go back to yours.
Sounds good to me, Mick. I appreciate your time.
See you, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.